Welcome to the Slow Living Podcast. If you are ready to ditch hustle culture for good while continuing to meet your personal and professional goals, you are in the right place. I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day, and I work with overachievers from all over the world who are ready to stop living life in triage mode and start living the life of their dreams, one filled with abundance, joy, and a sense of purpose. Life is meant to be enjoyed, not endured. Let's get started. Hi there, Slow Down Society. So if you're a fan of the podcast, you're going to absolutely love the book. Slow Living, Cultivating a Life of Purpose in a Hustle-Driven World is now available wherever books are sold. Buy it for yourself, your children, your friends, and your neighbors. You can get all the juicy details at stephanieoday.com/slowlivingbook. Trust me, this is hands down the best $20 you'll ever spend. Hi there, Slow Down Society. Steph here, and we are on episode 183 of the Slow Living Podcast. And today, we're going to take a deep breath because we're going to talk about being simple and intentional at the same time. And today, I'm thrilled to welcome Sarah Horgan to the podcast. Sarah is a coach, kindergarten teacher, wife, and mom who is passionate about simplicity and intentional living. Her journey toward a simplified life began in 2014 when she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, which was an experience that propelled her deep into self-reflection and personal growth. She realized that perfectionism and people-pleasing were not serving her and began focusing on small, meaningful changes. Motherhood further intensified her commitment to simplicity. With a busy household and no family support nearby, she found that decluttering, both physically and mentally, created the ease she craved. Now, through her simple and intentional platform and podcast, Sarah helps others simplify their homes, schedules, and mindsets to focus on what truly matters. Whether it's decluttering a closet or digging deep into the emotional roots of our attachment to stuff, Sarah empowers others to create a life of more peace and less overwhelm, which I think we could all agree absolutely encapsulates the slow living philosophy and methodology. Sarah, thank you for spending time with us today. And thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your story.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
So are you comfortable talking about the 2014 cancer diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely.
How did that come about?
You know, it's funny. I teaching kindergarten, I got sick all the time. And, but I felt like for me, it was almost constant. And then I had, a lump pop up at my collarbone that was probably the size of a golf ball. And it was like really hard. And I thought, that's not right. You know, that shouldn't be there. So I went and got it checked out, and very quickly, you know, my doctor sort of unofficially said to me, I'm going to send you for a chest x-ray, and then quickly told me, like, I think you have lymphoma. And sort of I went through the, like, you know, the subsequent steps of getting the diagnosis. And, you know, it was really, I guess I was like 32 or something. And yeah, it just really stopped my life. You know, like I couldn't work. I had a huge amount of fatigue. The tumor I had was on my heart and my lungs. So it was really hard for me to breathe very well. And, you know, as things progressed, and it actually progressed really rapidly to the point where like I was getting a lot of swelling in my head as well, because you have a big artery that runs up between your heart and your head. And it's a common thing that can get compressed when you have that kind of lymphoma. So I was like swelling and just having a hard time breathing. Like I was just really ill very quickly. And I ended up going into chemotherapy the same week that I got to the cancer hospital. Like I pretty much was at the point where I couldn't wait. And I was a stage 4, and yeah, it just really all happened very, very quickly. And then I was off work, and in a weird way, things were happening quickly, but also everything just like slowed right down, because yeah, my focus was just 100% on my health. And, you know, then you start thinking about what's important, like, how will I feel if I'm not here tomorrow? You know, what would I feel about my life? And, you know, at the time I felt really good about my relationships and that, you know, I had focused on things that mattered in my life. And in that way, I felt good. But, you know, so, like post, I can say, wow, like I'm glad I have this time to like actually explore purpose further and, you know, grow my life and in bigger ways. But yeah, like I started reading The Minimalists, Everything That Remains. That book came out that year. And that was sort of my beginning. I also read Soulful Simplicity by Courtney Carver. And I would say those two books just really like spurred me into thinking about minimalism, thinking about what matters, and starting to look at my stuff and, you know, in a way that I just like I hadn't really thought about it before. It's sort of like if you have space for it, then you keep stuff. And if you don't, you think about getting rid of stuff. It's where I was before. And then I came to this place of just being more intentional. But certainly, I would say at that point, I definitely dug more into perfectionism and people pleasing and just sort of like myself as a person. That was like, you know, although I began getting rid of things, like I really did look at my internal world a lot more at that point. And that's sort of how it started for me.
When you look at like a d before and after of before the diagnosis and after, and you felt as if you were people pleasing and doing things for others, what was your day to day like? Were you just dismissing your own thoughts and wants and needs?
Yeah, I think, you know, I have a really good example of this that when I came back to work, they put you on a return to work plan. And for anybody who ever goes through this, like take it because it's surprising how hard it is to return to real life. But I, you know, had somebody covering me, and so there was like a schedule about how to, you know, cover me and what hours I would be there. And one of the admin people at my work came up to me and we were talking about it. And then, like, there had been a mistake made. And she started to kind of launch into me about, well, how I have to fix it and da 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 da. And it was interesting because I think, like, before me would have been like, oh, of course, I'm so sorry I made that mistake. How could I have done that? And I would have 100% taken it on, felt terrible, you know, just like worried about it. And the me then actually said, you know, I'm really sorry a mistake got made. I don't like the way that you're talking to me about this. When you're like ready to talk to me about it in a different way, I can problem solve with you. And I walked away. And I would just like never have been able to do that before, like never, to stand up for myself, to like, you know, just be able to say, like, this doesn't feel good. And I would have really just taken it on. And so I think that that moment was a big contrast for me, because I was fresh out of, you know, this time off. I'd really been like so in to all the thinking around boundaries and, you know, self-love and self-care and all this stuff. And so like I was able to do that. And I think that that's one thing. It's really like, I guess in a way I'm less nice than I used to be before. But yeah, like I've learned to be direct and to say what I feel and what I mean, and to not, like, my saying at the time was, not my circus, not my monkeys, and just to really like take on what was mine and leave the rest. Whereas I used to get so into trying to help all the time and making sure that I didn't make mistakes. You know, I think that perfectionism piece of like really not wanting to ever make a mistake and not wanting to be wrong and like, you know, being the one who held responsibility for it. I started to see like where was the line of my responsibility and where was the line of other people's feelings and other people's responsibility and just being able to draw that instead of carrying it all the time.
Yeah, I love that phrase, not my circus, not my monkeys. And
Yeah.
it's interesting as a teacher, many times, I mean, if you've got a classroom of beings and then they have their parents, and then you have the admin, and then the admin's admin. There are times when, just for lack of a better word, I'm going to use the word rules. The rules change at the drop of a hat. And if you do have that kind of people pleaser like part of you, it's trying to accommodate all of these different opinions and variables, which unfortunately is actually a lot of times part of the quote unquote job description, but it's a recipe for disaster because teachers and then caregivers in general, and teaching is absolutely a caregiver profession because you're trying to educate, but you're also trying to meet the social and emotional needs of all of these people and all of their parents, at the same time. And so there's definitely a fine line between doing what's right to help meet everybody where they're at, but then also not being a doormat. And it's really tricky, and it's not something that's taught, but boundary setting so you don't overhelp and don't sacrifice yourself is not something that's taught. And unfortunately, in so many ways, it comes about through a moment of clarity that kind of happens from a disaster setting. And you were in a disaster. Your body needed you to pivot right there and right then. And I'm sorry. I hate that. And also I want to point out that I'm certainly not blaming being a people pleaser for lymphoma. And I know you aren't either. So
No.
cancer is a horrible thing that humans go through. And some people think that, oh, you brought it on yourself because you did this or that. And that is not ever my
No.
thought process. And I know that's not yours either.
Yeah. I think just one thing that I felt coming out of this is that when you can learn to set boundaries and you can learn to protect yourself emotionally, that only benefits your health. You know, it only allows you to like, receive that as a teacher, like receive that parent email. And whereas like before you might have some sort of reaction, you know, you might get that defensiveness or, but now I think for me, I can look at things and say, okay, that's theirs. You know, this is mine. Or, you know, they read that and they must have seen it this way. So they're having this reaction. I'm going to pick up the phone and call them because this is like, you know, something that we can talk through. Like it's sort of easier to look at things outside of yourself and look at people's emotions. As like, you know, emotions protect us, you know, they try to keep us safe. And they're also like in response to our lived experiences and what we see as normal. So when we can kind of like take a step back from somebody's reaction and say like, okay, they're really feeling this way, it seems. So I'm going to try to approach it with like this compassion or this softness. You usually get further than when you just fight back because yeah, people are people. Everybody's doing the best that they can. And I think that that's one thing that came out of that for me too, is that, you know, like nobody has ill intent, you know, they're really just trying to do the best they can. And sometimes that rubs up against you, but then you have to like be able to have that awareness of like, okay, that's theirs. This is mine. How can I like respond to this, you know, so that we can meet in the middle, we can problem solve, we can remedy things, but I don't need to be responsible for their upset or their anger or anything and carry that. Because I think, especially if you're an empathetic person, like I'm a very empathetic person, that like I can walk into the room and feel somebody's energy. And that's hard, you know, when you take on everybody's stuff, because then you're walking around carrying all this energy all the time. So boundaries became essential for me. And it was just something I didn't even know about before.
Yeah. Well, and it's true, and depending on how you were brought up and the different circumstances in your life, and this is something I still absolutely struggle with because I'm absolutely empathetic. If someone's in a bad mood, if I am not centered or grounded or at peace if I haven't taken the time to serve my needs and really front load my day with meditation and a lot of self-care. I will go down a shame spiral and start thinking of all of the things and dark thoughts of like, oh, this is because you're stupid and it's because you don't do anything right. And all of these like bad thoughts that can happen if you're in a somewhat low place. And depending on what you're consuming and who you're around, sometimes it's easier to go down that dark path. But you're absolutely right. When you're in a good place and you've decided on purpose and with intention to take care of yourself, and protect yourself, protect your boundaries and protect your nourishment and all of the things, it's much easier to go back to the that's on them, not my circus, not my monkeys. Let them be them. Like, oh, you must be having a hard day. I'm still me. And you're lashing out right now. But definitely easier said than done.
I also think another thing that really helped me too is when you look at somebody who's in a bad mood, you know, the tendency, I think, when you're people pleasing and is to try and fix it. Like you want to make it better because there is that piece of you that thinks it's related to you, you know, like, so there's two things. One, I always tell myself people think about you a lot less than you think they do. And I don't mean it in like a negative way, but it's true. Like we really think about ourselves a lot or what's going on immediately around us. We're not usually ruminating on other people, you know, like depending. So that one really helped me, but also that like sometimes when I had that tendency to like fix somebody's mood, that I wasn't actually allowing them to have the space to have the mood as well, which like they're allowed to feel angry or sad or whatever. I may not have to be around it, like if it's really impacting me in a negative way and I need to give them space or whatever, but that those two things actually really helped me as a people pleaser to be able to back off and be like, you know what? And especially now as a parent, because I've definitely told my daughter, like, you know, all feelings are allowed. You're allowed to feel the way you're feeling. And there was one day, she had been crying for a long time. And, you know, as a parent, like, you start to get really overstimulated. And, like, I was just, like, kind of at my end. And I said to her, like, can you please stop crying? Please. And she said, I'm allowed to feel however I need to feel. I was like, you're right. But then that's the cue for me to be like, I need to take a couple of minutes because I'm starting to, you know. But yeah, that it's okay for people to feel too, which is hard because when we care about people, we also want to make things better.
It's true. And what your daughter said is absolutely true. I find, and let me know if this is true for you. I have a lot more compassion and empathy when it comes to children's temper tantrums. And I'm able to work with them and walk them through it much easier. And maybe it's because I'm so good at that when a grown-up is snappy or snippy or has a quote unquote temper tantrum, I do not handle it well. And sometimes I think I've given away all of my good juju to helping that next generation, but this one, I'm like, oh my God, like learn to drive. And then the thoughts that are coming through my head are like, well, that's really not nice stuff.
You know what? It's true, actually. Like I do feel the same. Like you have less patience for adults, but I think it goes back to what you were saying before, like depending on how like grounded you are and like what place you're coming from, because then there's other times where, you know, I'm walking around and I'll think some thought about a stranger, you know, as we do. And then I'll think to myself, oh, you know what? Like they're doing the best they can, or like you shouldn't think that negative thing about them, you know, nothing about them, or you know, like you can kind of replace those thoughts sometimes. But when you're in like the grouchy mood, or like you know, you've given it all to the kids or whatever, that it's easier to be like, oh man, that person parked like a jerk, you know, or whatever.
So when I think of like self-care and the like filling your own cup first kind of thing, like I'm very good at that and start my day with really good intention. And since I try and stay away from other humans that I can't control, I start my day really full. But sometimes the people like it's energy zapping and care zapping. Do you have any pointers to kind of how to refill your cup throughout the day so when you get home, you're not snapping at your husband and your own kids?
So I really try to get as much quiet as I can. So often, like when I take the space between home and work, like sometimes I just drive home in silence. Sometimes I listen to something, or I'll listen to music or a book or something that like, but it depends. I kind of gauge like what I need, but I take that kind of container, that space, as like, okay, this is like the transition, this is my window, to like, 'cause sometimes that's all we have, you know? I also try to work things in during the day, like little things that sort of make, 'cause I like to focus on little things that bring joy. And like I got myself a milk frother this year, and I bring it to work so I can have like a tea latte at work, and like I do little things like that. But I also really always pack like nourishing food and snacks, because I like to also keep my energy steady. And I really, really notice a big difference when I don't eat well during the day, or I have, you know, the day where you don't have much left in the fridge and you bring like a crummy lunch, and then you end up like eating the snacks in the staff room or whatever, right? And so by the end of the day, like that really impacts my ability to be more regulated. And yeah, like I need to have protein throughout the day. I need to have fruits and vegetables. And if I just eat a bunch of carbs, like by the end of the day, I'm headachy, I'm grouchy. So I feel like food, actually, number one, probably impacts that the most, because it's a way of like keeping yourself steady throughout the day. Yeah, and then like, you know, like I said, like little things, focusing on that, having the space. Yeah, and there's one more thing that might come back to me, but
Yeah.
yeah, I think that, you know, you just really have to take care of yourself in the ways that you can. Oh, I know what it was. Earplugs. I actually own earplugs. So when I start to feel really overwhelmed at work, it's very loud, and I start to like feel that sensitivity, I wear earplugs, and it just filters out the noise. And that actually has a big impact on how regulated I stay. So again, I know
Like
for
the
me,
foamy. The foamy ones in
I
the
have a
package
pair
at
of
the
loop.
drugstore?
I have a pair of loop earplugs. I
Oh,
bought them.
I've heard of those. Okay. Loop
Yeah.
earplugs.
I
Okay.
just noticed I was getting really, really overstimulated and overwhelmed. And this is something that I think, like, since I become a parent, is really true for me. And it's probably just because I have much less time to myself, much less space, to like reset. You know, like I used to come home from work and like have a nap and stuff like that. I don't do that anymore. So, I've come to realize, like, I used to call myself an extrovert, but I would say that I'm probably like firmly planted in the middle, where I love socializing and I do get energy from that, but I also need enough time and space to reset myself as well. So, the earplugs really help, because it's sort of like just slowing the flow of like what you're taking in during the day, so that by the end of the day, you're not like so overwhelmed and overstimulated. Yeah, so that's just, I guess it's like a self-awareness piece of knowing like what is it that tips you over the edge. For me, noise is huge. I'm getting touched all day. I'm getting like constant noise. There's very little, you know, like at lunch, I don't usually socialize with my coworkers. Like I eat, I go to the classroom, turn out the lights, eat in quiet. Like I just know that I need that. So I think it's just the self-awareness of knowing like what is going to help you stay steady.
I'm glad you brought up lunch because I was going to ask about that. When I was teaching preschool and I was in the preschool setting, I went into kind of a quiet room and read a novel or looked through a magazine and just kind of had my lunch to myself. And then I know in college, I would go and sit in my car for that kind of quiet. And I'm noticing now that I'm trying to do too many things at lunch to like get ahead. Like I'll go run an errand or go to the grocery store or check in with my mom or different things. And so I'm not doing things for myself and I'm still it's as if I'm trying to be productive all of the time. And I can tell it's It's not working. Like I get a little bit of a dopamine hit from being productive, but
Me too.
it wears me out. And I'm realizing just listening to you, like, okay, Steph, you need to unplug for a little bit and go for a walk. And go for a walk probably without listening to something and maybe just look for birds.
It's hard to do. Like I said, like I would listen to podcasts, but what I started to realize is like partway through my drive home, I would start to feel so tired, and then I'd flick off the podcast, and then I would feel a little bit more alert. I'm like, it's because I'm trying to like ask myself to take in all this information while driving, while being tired from work. Like sometimes we just have to. It's hard because the productivity thing, like it's so hard. I know I get the same tendency. I'm like, okay. And sometimes I use my lunch like in quiet. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna check in with my budget, or I'm gonna like write go through my meal plan, or I do those things sometimes, but in like a quiet space. And you know, because I get to socialize with my coworkers like throughout the day, a lot of as teachers, like it's a social environment. So it's almost like we have to find the space, which is really hard in a school to find the space to like turn it off. I'm fortunate now in the space that I'm in that I can like shut a door and turn out the light kind of thing and like keep it calm. But I certainly have not always had that, and it is a challenge, but I think it's necessary to give ourselves that little break in the day, no matter what we do, but especially if you're in a job where it's like coming at you all the time.
No, it's many of the women that I work with are teachers or retired teachers or nurses, because I think it's that same sort of there's lots of people around all of the time, and you can have a perfectly planned day or think you know what you're going to do, but there's so much that happens that you just can't control that you have to quickly pivot and think on your feet, and it is it's exhausting. It's funny, every once in a while I'll ask my husband, because he has a desk job, like what do you do for the first hour? So what he does essentially at times the first hour at work is what I have to do for myself early in the morning, like drink your coffee or tea and check the headlines and answer the email. But I've already done all of that before I even get dressed in the morning.
Yeah, totally. It's so true. Like, because it's a weird, also, there's like a rigidity to being in a school environment or something like that because it's so routine. And which I mean is helpful in a lot of ways, but it's true. Like, you have to create that time for you and space for yourself, whereas some people get to start that day off. Although I think if I had to be at a desk job, like I just wouldn't be able to do it. I did a placement at like a social housing agency because I did social work before I did teaching. I thought I was going to be a social worker, but I realized that the boundaries at that time, anyways, like I wasn't going to be able to do it through these placements I'd done. But I remember sitting at this desk and I would like feel so drowsy during the day. I'm like, oh, I think I just am somebody I need to be moving around.
We have a lot of parallels, 'cause I spent some time working for a social work company and working with homeless families and different things, and it was gratifying. I liked being able to help, but there's a lot that I couldn't fix, and so yeah, it drained me.
It's like an endless, whereas like students, like kids, there's going to be similar issues, of course. Like now, especially with teaching the way it's evolved, like we're very social emotional health and mental well-being, but there's a lot more like positivity in that environment, whereas I think social work, I'm so grateful for all the people that are able to do that job, because it's so essential and it's so necessary. But it is a really hard one to create boundaries in.
It's interesting. It's as if, and I'm going off on a tangent now, but it's as if somehow, what is it in the Zootopia movie where the sloth works at the DMV and they're like very disconnected? Sometimes I think those type of positions, the less empathetic you are, you actually might do better, because it's just It's
Have to turn
this
it
is
off.
just a black square. We're trying to fix this black square and fit it into a red diamond, and it's like a puzzle. Whereas I start thinking about, well, how are they raised? And there's it, and yeah, so very
I know,
interesting.
totally. Yeah, it does get you into like, I know, I think that I'm like, I always want to know the why behind. I'm like, well,
Yeah.
why did they send that email? That
Yeah.
was a big reaction.
So with the intentional living and the simplifying, how does that overlap with decluttering and minimalism?
So I think it like, you know, again, it's a piece of where I started with this. And, you know, a few years down the road, I guess, well, now, like since I began, it's over 10 years, really. But it's funny how time flies like that. But I would say I started the, looking at the stuff. And I think that it's because our stuff and our environment is very reflective of what's happening inside of us. And, you know, it can be reflective of what level of self-care you're giving yourself, your self-worth and your self-value. And the further I've gone down this, I think that self-worth is a huge piece of this. And it's something that we don't really talk about a ton. We don't really recognize, and it seems like a huge thing to say, oh, like you might have low self-worth, but I actually think that most of us on some level have low self-worth, you know, in that we are, you know, like related to the people pleasing, for example. If you are putting other people's needs before yourself all the time, then you are not valuing your self-worth. And so it doesn't have to be like drastic. There's so many ways, like, or if you're not taking the time to exercise or give yourself a nourishing meal, then you aren't giving yourself that care. And that's related to self-worth as well. So, women, especially, I think, you know, we've already talked about like being in caretaking roles. Like, in one area of our life or another, we are in a caretaking role, almost all of us, you know, so we are thinking about others, but the problem is when it gets out of balance, where we're like caring for other people, but we're not caring for ourselves. And our environments can become really reflective of that. It's like, you know, these little piles of things around, like the things you want to be doing, but you aren't, because you're putting other people's needs ahead of yourself. It's also like not taking the time and putting the energy, although like those are probably most scarce resources, but the things that we should put towards creating a space for ourselves that feels good, that we can rest in, that we can restore in, but we aren't. And so we end up with like, you know, things being really untidy, cluttered, you know, unclean because we don't have the time and energy to clean. And then when things become cluttered, it becomes even harder to clean. You know, like it's not just like wiping off one surface. You know, like I'm a busy working mom and I don't have time to clean my house every single day. I take time every day to do something, but you know, it's much easier to wipe off an empty dresser top than it is something that's covered in stuff. So I think that it is making the connection between what your environment looks like and feels like, and what's happening inside. And that when we can start to simplify and when we can start to think about our stuff, like I said before, I used to just think if you had space for stuff, you could keep it. But instead, it's thinking like, I want to have certain things in my life and I don't want to have certain things in my life, or this has value for me and this doesn't. And when we start to make decisions, especially if you're not a very decisive person to begin with, like, you know, just practicing making decisions can feel really big. Like, you know, for us, I think in education, we're talking about such a busy environment. Like, you get really good at making decisions because you're doing it all the time. But some people, it's really, really hard. So it's just like practicing that decision making, saying, this is a yes for me and this is a no. And, you know, just developing that intentionality about just the little stuff. Like, and just build it from there. But I really do think that if you can kind of take a pause, look around your space, your environment, and say, what does this say about me? What does this say about what I want in life? You know, what is this reflecting back to me? And think about it from that place. It can become a bit more motivating to take some action. And I certainly do not encourage women to go all in. Like, I think starting from a place of, I'm going to make one decision today, or I'm going to set a timer for like 5 or 10 minutes. I'm just going to do something is such a better mindset to be able to do something about it. And from the perfectionism place too, like I really had to start there because I used to be like, okay, this is the weekend, you know, I'm going to do this. And it burns you out. Then you may do something incredible in a weekend, but then the rest of the week or the following 2 months, you do nothing because you've just burnt yourself out. So how can you show up to it regularly? And how can you start to say on a regular basis what matters to me and what doesn't, and think about it from that place, I think you can really do incredible things.
I think we see that a lot when it comes to cleaning or purging, and then also like starting an exercise program of it's all or nothing, and then all of a sudden you've injured your shoulder and you can't do anything for a few weeks, and then you start beating yourself up. And I'm really tickled that you brought up self-worth, 'cause this has been something in my own life that I thought I was really good at. And so we had a lot of rain in the San Francisco Bay Area, and then spring just happened, just like happened. And so because of that, my allergies have been nuts. And I haven't been feeling the best, haven't been sleeping the best, and all of the histamines are kind of all over the place. And if you take a decongestant, okay, that's great, but then also it sort of messes up my gut for a little while, and so I'm dealing with that. So all of these things mean that I haven't gone out in the backyard and done weeding. And since we had so much rain and then the sun, the weeds are everywhere. Every single brick in the back patio has a weed perimeter around it. And it's kind of overwhelming. But when I went out, I took such ownership of it that my first thought was that I'm behind, that I'm a loser. Like, what is wrong with you, Steph? Like, how dare you binge watch Southern Charm and fold laundry yesterday instead of going outside and weeding? Like, I actually really was down on myself that there were weeds in the backyard, where if you go for a walk, there's weeds everywhere right now because this is just the time of year where there's weeds. And weeds or not having weeds doesn't mean you're a good person or a bad person. It has nothing to do with your morals or your ethics. Yet for some reason, I, and maybe women in general, my husband certainly doesn't. So I'll just from but yeah, from our own very small sample size, it seems like it's a me problem. Feel unworthy, feel like I've screwed up somehow by allowing these weeds to come.
I really think that you know, it's like that productivity thing. I feel like a lot of us get a lot of our like self-worth and our self-value from like how productive we are and you know, holding it all. And you know, when we do let something like that go, you know, I had the same thing. Like my daughter was just sick, like throwing up, and so I was up like the entire night. And the next day we just like watched movies and I like read a book, and the same, like I was battling those thoughts, like you should be doing this, you're not checking your emails, you're not doing this, like you're gonna be behind, blah, blah, blah. Like it's like the voice that's there all the time, and it's like, no, you know what, I didn't sleep, like I just need to do something for myself and like have that space. But it is really, really, really hard to take that. But I think it is just like consistently like trying to replace those thoughts and like fighting against them. I read Jamie Kern Lima's book Worthy, and I really liked that. I'm also working my way through Meadow DeVore's book The Worthy Project. And I've just been trying to find more books and learn more about self-worth because I think this is the root of a lot of this stuff, and that if we can start to build you know, really strong self-worth, then a lot of these things become easier. So like you don't think like, oh, I have to declutter my house. You think instead like, oh, I really want this to feel better. So what can I do about it? And like, how am I going to tackle it? And you kind of come from it like come at it from like a problem solving lens, or like this is something I want to create for myself and like get excited about it, instead of like I'm failing, or look at how I live, this is terrible. Like you can replace those thoughts with better ones, because we're not doing it all. None of us are doing it all, and we have to like build that self-compassion. And just you're not going to get anywhere by like beating yourself up. Like that's just not the way you're going to get there. So if you want to get there, think about like how can you make it work, and how can it feel better, and like how can it be enjoyable, like because getting rid of stuff can be, once you get into it, like it could be kind of fun. Like you can put on a movie and say, I'm going to go through this box of papers, or I'm going to dig through these photos, and you can just make it something that's enjoyable. Nobody says you have to like make it arduous and like that you just have to keep ch chipping away at
Yeah.
it. Like you can make it fun. You could have a friend come over. You can do things like I have like my online membership community, and there I'm sure there's other things out there like that where you can like join a community or like find other people to get the motivation and the accountability. So I think that there's ways that you can make this something really meaningful too, like taking charge of your life and saying, I want to live a different way. And that feels so empowering versus feeling stuck in a place where, you feel overwhelmed and stuck and tired and like you can't do anything about it.
Yeah. You and I spoke last week, and we spoke early in the morning, and then I went to work, and I work in an elementary school in the front office, but it happened to be a no student day. So it was a teacher work day, and the teachers were working on report cards, and I had already provided the teachers all of the things they needed for the report card, so I had essentially a free day. So fresh off of talking to you, where I teased you that a kindergarten teacher and a minimalist is an oxymoron, I went into the supply room, and I spent the entire day cleaning it and decluttering and minimalizing, and getting rid of lots and lots of stuff. And I was thankful that the teachers were all tucked in their classroom, and not paying attention to all of the things I was tossing out. So how does that happen? Like there are some personalities that, and hoarding is an actual like medical mental illness. But the idea that there was like a little baggie of so, back in the day, we would have the frozen orange juice canisters. Yeah. So there was a baggie of those little metal things, and like they were half rusted. And I get the idea of saving them, but I'm like, nope, we're time. So I took them out of the plastic and threw them in the recycle bin. But how do you get out of that mindset of, oh, I might need this someday?
I think it has to do with scarcity, and I think that's another thing that all of us battle. And because our brains are wired that way, and Michael Easter has a book called Scarcity Brain, and like he explains all of the sort of science behind it and how our minds work. But yeah, like I think we all are wired for scarcity. We're our brains, are still kind of old in some ways. And so we do have to replace those thoughts again and like build new ways of thinking and carve out those neural pathways. Because we get thinking, oh, that's hard to come by, or we're not going to be able to find that when we need it, or we won't have what we need when we need it. And it's like we have to replace those thoughts with like, if you go to do a craft and you need those like metal lids, the next time you're going to figure something else out because you don't have that. And if teachers are anything, it's very resourceful. And I've certainly been in that situation where we think, oh, we don't have that thing anymore. What can we do instead? So you're going to figure out something else. Like there will be another solution. Maybe you're going to borrow it. Maybe you're going to come up with a different solution. Maybe you're going to change your plan and do something different. There will be another outcome. than, oh, we don't have that thing, so everything's ruined, And so I think it's that we have to practice it, like teach ourselves that things we are okay without. And I think that happens through the practice of decluttering because you get rid of things and you start to realize that you're okay without. And it's very, very rare that I think you come up upon a time where you've gotten rid of something and you wish you still had it. I mean, once I think a curling iron I got rid of because I never used, and then I ended up replacing it because I was like, oh, you know what? My daughter would like love this. And then I've used it twice. Like, I'm probably this curling iron again. It's crazy. But I think, like, it's very rare that you're going to come up and think, I shouldn't have gotten rid of that. So we have to get comfortable with just letting things go and realizing we're okay. And, I think it comes from also like how we were raised, like what did our parents think? And we're coming out of like generations too, where stuff was not bountiful and cheap the way it is now. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily a good thing, but that you can with ease order something from Amazon or go to the dollar store and replace most things quickly. So that can be a comforting thought to you if it's like, hard for you to let go of stuff, to know like I can order something and it can come to my door a day or two later. So, whereas like our, when I was growing up, we had the same stuff in my house for most of my life. Things came in or out, but that, there was a lot of things that were just there. Like once you bought that piece of furniture, that was the piece of furniture you had always, whereas now, because things are cheaper or whatever, and people like remodeling and redecorating is just like so much more common. Things come in and out. So I think we just have to get comfortable with the fact that we're able to replace things, but that actually letting go and living without is okay, and we are okay. But you only really prove that to yourself by doing it.
Yeah.
So I think that's, yeah.
I agree. And also the feeling of being uncomfortable is a feeling. So if you have to pivot or be creative, that's an uncomfortable feeling. But the uncomfortable feeling of being bogged down and weighed down by stuff is a lot more prevalent. And so if you can decide, you know what, maybe in 3 or 4 years, I might be bummed, but I'm really uncomfortable right now. And the only thing I can control right now is how I feel. And I don't like how this is. And so I would rather free up this mental space and physical space. And I'll be okay if in a few years I'm disappointed. Whatever. It'll be okay.
Yeah, you're so right. Like, I think that's the part where the mindfulness and the meditation is really helpful, because it's like being okay with like sitting with your feelings, because yeah, there's discomfort in this, but also discomfort in life. So the more that we can like, move through the discomfort, the less that we're likely to act on those behaviors that we did before that got us cluttered. Like when you felt discomfort and then you went and bought something, or you went and filled the hole with something instead of just being able to be with it. And then you're like, oh, I can weather discomfort. Like you build this self-confidence to be like, and resilience, like I'm capable of this. And I mean, I just think you gain so much from examining your life and making decisions about what you want to keep and what you want to let go of. And taking that empowered stance of like creating a life and choosing versus just letting things happen.
Hard agree. Hard agree. Sarah, before we log off, how can people find you? How can we learn more about you?
I'm on Instagram at Simple Intentional. You can find me there. I'm most active there. I also have a podcast as well called the Simple and Intentional Podcast, if you're a podcast listener. And I have an online community for women as well, which you can find either through my bio and on Instagram or on my website, simpleintentional.com/membership. It's an online community for busy women, basically, and it focuses on, helping you declutter, setting goals and like basically going after those goals. If you want to be more intentional about something, I have guest experts come in every month and teach a class. I have a class I teach every month. And then we have live sessions where we get together. You can declutter, we can set goals, make plans, that kind of thing. There's meditations. There's just like a whole lot in there. So, yeah, if it's something that you're looking at getting more intentional about, you can check that out as well. It's a month to month, so there's no long-term commitment either.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. All
No, and
right,
thank
slow
you.
down, society. Consider yourself loved and hugged. I think you are amazing and lovely and wonderful. And I will be back in your earbuds next week. If you are ready to start living slowly and ditch the hustle mindset for good, reach out to me. I'm a real person and you can track me down online at stephanieoday.com. Also, if you found value in this podcast, please share it with your family and friends and tag me on Instagram at Stephanie O'Day. While you're at it, go ahead and leave a positive review on your favorite podcast app. The more we share, like, the more people we can reach and share the slow down lifestyle and messaging. Thank you, Slow Down Society, and have a great day.